Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and her Corridor news readers Chloe Weinstein, Simone Utley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, featuring an interview with Chloe Stewart of the Queens Community Housing Residents Association about a proposed 35% rent increase and the impact it will have on the current community housing residents.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca. The Queens Community Housing Residents Association, QCHRA, an association which was formed by people who live in housing managed by Queens, is speaking out regarding the sudden rent increase of 10.5% that they were made aware of in late December, as well as the disappointing series of discussions with the university over the past few months. Chloe and Valentina, members of QCHRA and graduate students at Queens, sat down with CFRC to discuss where they are now with Queens Community Housing, and what their next steps are after their last discussion with the university in March. Here's a bit of our conversation.
To start us off, I was wondering if you could introduce yourselves and share a little bit about QCHRA, just in general, for folks who aren't aware.
Sure. My name is Chloe. I'm a postdoctoral fellow here at Queens.
My name is Valentina. I'm a PhD student in the English department.
And the Queens Community Housing Residents Association, or QCHRA, is a group that has been formed by the people who live in community housing residences. So that's housing that's managed by Queens, and that would be John Orr and Anne Clacken are the two sites. These are predominantly grad students. And basically, QCHRA is kind of like a union that you would have at your job, but instead of being for people who work together, it's people who live in the same buildings. So we kind of formed together after it became clear that Queens Community Housing was planning to make a number of changes to our living situations. This included a huge rent increase, much above the provincial guidelines. So the provincial guidelines are 2.5% per year, and Queens Community Housing was intending to raise our rent 10.5% for the coming year. And they recently revealed that they're planning to do that again for the year after that, and then again for the year after that. So that's altogether a 35% rent increase. They're also instituting a number of other changes that would be very problematic for people who live there. Mm-hmm. Things like limiting how long you can stay in housing. So even if you're still a student, if you've completed as many years as they believe it should take you to complete your graduate degree, then they will evict you from your home.
Yes, on this thing was quite funny. I think we will talk about that later, but we had a meeting with community mm-hmm. housing on March 6th, I believe. Mm-hmm. And at this meeting, we said, so are you planning to institute a limit of 3 years for PhD students? And they said, yes. And we're like, well, first of all, it's not 3 years, mm-hmm. it's four. And second, it's not four either. Because realistically speaking, nobody finishes their PhD in 4 years. Mm-hmm. And they were surprised by that, which is like, didn't you research this? This isn't exactly, occult knowledge known to mm-hmm. very few people. This is very well known. So they have imposed a 3-year lease renewal limit for PhD students, a 1 year for master's students. And the thing that is intriguing, so to speak, is that many students who get their master's here, they usually think about getting their PhD here. Mm-hmm. And you would think, oh, so you get 1 year as a master's student and then 3 years as a PhD student. No, you get your lease renewal as a master's student.
What it is if you are a master's student and you get to roll over into your PhD, you're only allowed to stay in community housing for 4 years. So you'd only be able to stay for the first 2 years of your PhD, and then you would be evicted. So even though you've started a new degree, a completely different degree, and you're still a student at Queen's, they would not allow you to stay in housing.
Yeah. And I believe these changes came quite suddenly as well. If people just received notices, is that sort of how it went?
Yeah. So actually, it was quite this like strange process where in October, community housing had a meeting with SGPS, and in that meeting, they mentioned, oh, by the way, we're planning to make these changes to housing. How do you feel about it? And SGPS said, no, you can't do that. These changes are bad, and we can't see anybody thinking these are good changes. And they let our union, which is PSAC 901, know about these changes, which is how all of us found out. None of us knew, and community housing was not communicating to us that these were coming down the line. It was only because SGPS let us know. And then they kept completely silent about it until we heard from them. So on December 20th, which is already after most people have left for the winter holidays, like over that break, on December 20th, they slid notices under our doors, letting us know how much the rent increase would be and letting us know that, that this was non-negotiable, and also demanding that we sign our lease renewal request a full month earlier than usual, which we think was a way of getting people to basically like kind of have to do it right away rather than like letting people consider as they would have been able to do before, because they wanted us to agree to that rent increase, which this is also the first time we heard the actual number, that 10.5%. They had not been at all sharing what that would be before they slipped that notice under our doors.
It is worth noting, by the way, that we signed a lease renewal, like we applied to renew our lease. Our new leases have not come yet. They are coming in April. We don't know when. Allegedly, they're coming in April. But I guess that, to be fair, and it's not much fairness, they did send an email in November, quite late in November, though, where they say that we could check on the site for the new fair access policy changes. Now, I say to be fair, but when you go to that site, you can find their proposals, but they're not very clear. Like they did say, we are thinking of raising rent. They did not give a number. They did not say how much. They did say nothing. They are saying, we are thinking of renewing Anklagen. They're not saying when. They're not saying, they're just thinking about it in the future. It's implied that it's going to be essentially a renovation, but they're not saying that. They're saying we are thinking of putting a lease renewal. They're not very clear about that. So, yeah, they did send out an email in November that wasn't very clear, sending us to a page in the site that is not very clear. So, yes, in their defense, they did that.
Yeah, we're just feeling this lack of transparency basically throughout all of this.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like our big complaints, other than, of course, all of these changes that obviously none of us agree with. The lack of transparency has been, like, really upsetting. A lot of people obviously live in this housing. They rely on it to be able to have their families live. Many people who live in housing have children. Multiple children sometimes they've got parents living with them, people live there with spouses and partners, and everybody kind of relies on this because, as you're probably aware, like graduate students are paid very little at this university, exceptionally little, and the cost of living, of course, as everybody knows, is going up and up and up in this city and across the country and in the world, let's be fair. It is certainly going up everywhere, but funding packages are not going up. A majority of graduate students in this university earn less than $30,000 a year, often substantially less than that. And that amount is what they're paid, not considering that they have to pay tuition back out of that. So for every amount that somebody earns, you have to take like $8,000 off of that at least to account for tuition. And then they're expected to live on that. They have to pay rent. They have to pay for food. They have to take care of their children. They have to take care of their families, all on like $10,000 a year, sometimes less.
Chloe and Valentina also discussed their last meeting with the university on March 6th, where they also stated to the university that they are planning to bring this to the landlord-tenant board. So you're given that 10.5 figure sort of in December, and then March 6th, you had that conversation. Was that sort of the last formal communication that you had with Queens Community Housing?
Yeah. So basically, one of the things that sort of community housing has been pointing to this whole time is that as an educational landlord, they are allowed to exceed the provincial guidelines of rent increases because they're exempt from that increased limit, which is true. However, we formed this tenants association, the residents association, in October. So right at the end of October, we formed this group, and they acknowledge that our group exists. And there is an exemption to the exemption that they're using, where if a tenants association exists, they have to consult with that association before they raise rent. They have to. Legally, they must. Like, it is required that they do that, regardless of the fact that they're exempt because they're an educational landlord. But they didn't, because of course they slipped those notes under our doors without ever speaking to any of us, even though they acknowledged that they knew that we existed. So we went to this meeting with them on March 6th, as you brought up. At this meeting, it did not go well. I think if anybody has been following the way that conversations with upper administration has been going at this university thus far, it's a lot of people saying, like, the way that this is being handled is unacceptable and the things that you're doing are unacceptable, and the administration going, we're listening, we're hearing you. And then they don't do anything about it, right? They're listening. They're always listening, but they're never doing anything about it. It was very much that kind of experience. But because they knew that legally they had to consult with us, they called it a consultation, but it was certainly not that. It was largely an opportunity for them to tell us what was going to happen and then to stand there and listen while we told them things and then to disregard that at that meeting that we had on March 6th. We obviously all said, we do not agree with any of the changes that you're making. And we asked them to say very clearly, when were these changes made? When was it decided that these changes were going to come through? And they said, you know when these changes were made. And we were like, could you tell us when that was? And they said, in December, when you got your notice. And we said, interesting. So that's before March that you did that, which means that they have admitted verbally, and we have a recording of this, they've admitted that they did not consult with residents before they made this change. So it is an illegal rent increase. Whether or not they're going to try to go ahead with it, that's a different question. But it is certainly illegal, and we are intending to bring this to the landlord-tenant board to sort of fight against this as best we can.
Yeah, so that would be sort of your next step after if you're not getting a response in the next bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have not been in communication with the landlord since that meeting. They did, obviously they heard us say that, and they seemed quite freaked out by it, and they stopped communicating with us. They also stopped the meeting right there. And then quite recently, about like a week or less ago, they sent an email to tenants saying, we're pushing back the date when we're sending you our leases, the new leases. So they're supposed to come out in March, and now they're coming out in April. So we don't know what changes they're intending to make, if any, if they're going to try to, like, work around it and say, well, we did technically consult with you. So, like, even though you disagreed, but, like, we have the very firm, clear proof that what they're doing is illegal.
They also described what the university could do to prevent QCHRA from bringing this issue to the landlord-tenant board. And you're saying the next step is sort of that application to the tenant board. And I was wondering, what could the university do before that to prevent that? What are you asking for, pretty much, that they could do that would actually remedy the situation, at least to some extent?
Yeah, I think first and foremost, we're asking them to meet with us and actually meet with us. We don't want another meeting where they're presenting to us and then they sit down and listen to all our questions, and then, which is what they did. They refused to respond in the moment to each individual question. They sat down and wrote down every question and then got up to answer them, and therefore were able to not answer many of the questions that were asked of them. We would like an actual consultation where they actually speak to residents. We would like them to obviously not raise the rent by 10.5% this year. And we'd also like to really push them to scale back their planned further rent increases for the future. We're also asking them to consider other ways of increasing the housing supply in Kingston.
Basically, what we're asking them is to realize that we are smart people. Surely, they know we are smart people. They wouldn't have accepted us to this program if we weren't. So you cannot come here and just expect us to believe everything that you're telling us. You cannot come here and say that, this lease renewal limit will help make housing more affordable because it will make other people get into housing, because it is pretty clear to everybody that you're not really giving more people housing. You're just creating some sort of like a merry-go-round of housing where people just keep on circling around this. Are you fixing anything there? Or are you just mocking me right now? Have you just decided to make it difficult just for no reason? So like, have some respect, I think. Mm-hmm. is really the baseline. So like, have some respect. And once you see me as a person with a brain who is able to understand what you're telling me, then maybe also converse with me and maybe we can reach a some sort of understanding.
Finally, Chloe and Valentina shared where you can keep up with QCHRA and support them.
If people are interested in like hearing more about what we're up to and what we're doing, they can follow us on Instagram at Queens Community Tenants. You can also check out our Linktree, which is like linktr.ee/QCHRA23. And that has like all of our information. We'd especially appreciate, we have like a petition up there right now that non-tenants are welcome to sign to show solidarity with us and to show that they disagree with the changes Queens is making. So we really ask people to sign that if they're willing. Keep your eyes peeled. We're going to be making some moves along with like the Students versus Cuts teams and other groups like that to start sort of bringing our message more fully into view. We really invite people to keep their eyes peeled and to stand with us on this, because we're not alone in this. We are certainly just one part, as we said, of the austerity struggle. And we would love to get more involved in the broader community.
Thank you, Chris. Over to Chloe Weinstein with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about an ambitious pilot program involving Kingston Victim Services.
Kingston will be one of the 9 municipalities whose victim services providers will take part in a pilot program alongside the tech company Genvis. The Australian female-founded company creates software that is aimed at improving public safety in communities with a specific focus on family and domestic violence. The company's goal is to change and improve the support that victims receive. The pilot program will provide people facing intimate partner and gender-based violence with a personal safety app called Millie, while the service providers themselves will be given access to Genvis case management software, Kudo. Millie began in response to a rash of homicides in Australia where the perpetrators were hiding inside the victims' homes. This inspired Genvis CEO Christian Butcher to create an app that relies on closed-circuit television so that women can know what's going on inside their homes and make informed decisions based on that. The feedback Genvis received from victims and service providers led to the integration of Millie with Kudo in order to help streamline communication between victims and caseworkers without putting the victims at risk. In a release from Genvis, the company shared that a woman or girl in Canada dies every 48 hours due to intimate partner and gender-based violence. And additionally, spousal violence alone costs the country $7.4 billion a year. Experts say that there's an urgent need for improved data sharing, reporting, and collaboration, and Genvis hopes that the integration of their two products can help address that. Genvis's country manager for Canada, Brenda Dillon, says that the two products can help give victims more flexibility and find support. Millie's primary purpose is to ensure that all victims have the support they need regardless of where they are, which can really help those in remote or rural locations. Kudo, on the other hand, is focused on streamlining service provider operations and improving data sharing ability, essentially improving the day-to-day operations of these organizations and enhancing their interconnectivity. A simple change, like victims being able to share information and documents in a safe manner without actually having to come into a service provider's office, is something that has been needed and is long overdue. Dylan says more efficient sharing of information between victims and service providers can quite literally be the difference between life and death. Victim Services of Kingston and Frontenac will be one of the 9 municipalities in Ontario set to implement GenVis's programs. It is one of the 52 provincially funded victim services programs throughout the province. Paula Laughlin, Executive Director of Victim Services in the region, said that when approached by GenVis with the proposal, it was immediately interesting. She says it was clear that the two programs could help address the gaps that service providers were seeing when it comes to the storing and sharing of information, with Millie's cloud-based services keeping things more secure. The pilot kicks off this month, and GenVis will hold a launch event at Queen's University on May 2nd. Thank you to Owen Fullerton of YGK News for that story. We now go to Dinah Jansen with a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstel, about the latest KFLNA community health update.
Thank you, Chloe. At its most recent meeting on Wednesday, March 27th, the Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Board of Health heard the monthly community health update from Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Piotr Oglaza. Oglaza noted that the respiratory season is winding down in the city, elaborating and explaining that only 2 of the 5 indicators are above risk thresholds, and even then those indicators are driven by influenza only. Oglaza also emphasized that COVID-19 indicators, wastewater, hospitalization, and outbreaks are all at low levels. Overall respiratory-related emergency visits and new admissions are at or below historic levels. When asked about the reappearance of measles in the province, Oglaza stated that Kingston's local immunization coverage for measles is one of the highest in the province, that the public health teams are working closely to prepare for a response should any local cases arise. Oglaza ended the briefing by discussing the upcoming solar eclipse and the potential risks that a mass gathering of this nature may hold for the community. The local health unit also provides safety messaging on the KFLNA public health website and other media for any mass gatherings. The number of people in the region will increase the risk of disease spread. Oglaza advised the public to ensure they are up to date with all immunizations, including measles. He also mentioned some local considerations such as Lyme disease. Ticks begin their emergence in spring, and with many outside to view the eclipse, there may be an increased risk in the spread of Lyme disease. Given recent local cases, the spread of avian influenza is also a concern. Oglaza said messaging will inform people about this and encourage them to keep their pets leashed away from sick and dead birds. Oglaza also encouraged people to plan for having basic necessities before eclipse day. Lastly, he stressed that the eclipse cannot be viewed without special protective eyewear. Certified eclipse glasses available at Tourism Kingston, Kingston Frontenac Public Library branches, and elsewhere, including spots on Queen's University campus. To learn more about how to prepare for the total solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th, 2024, visit KFLNA Public Health's Eclipse page. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstel from the Kingstonist for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from LJI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, about a joint effort between Kananoque and the Township of Leeds in the Thousand Islands to recruit more physicians to the region.
Thank you, Dinah. Kananoque and the Township of Leeds and the Thousand Islands are following through on efforts to recruit doctors. In August of 2023, the township, as well as the town of Kananoque, began working together on physician recruitment. A physician recruitment working group was formed, made up of representatives from Kananoque and TLTI. The Kananoque representatives are Dr. Brian Hart, Mayor John Beddoes, and Deputy Mayor Vicky Leakey, and the TLTI representatives are Councillor Mark Jameson and Deputy Mayor Terry Fody. At the time, TLTI announced it had established its own suite of incentives to attract family physicians to clinics located in Lansdowne and Sealy's Bay, and it was moving forward to enact them, including a targeted media campaign. Kananoque followed suit, and now that media campaign has begun. This week, the two municipalities released a short video on their social media platforms. This video highlights why the region is a great place to practice medicine. Mayor John Beddoes noted that this partnership would, quote, provide relief to all parties involved, as there is patient crossover between Kananoque and TLTI. Both municipalities have developed a Physician Experiential Locum program, which is intended to assist in the recruitment of family physicians to the Kananoque and TLTI areas through grant funding for short-term locums. The locums provide an opportunity for family physicians to come and experience the communities in both a professional and personal capacity. The two municipalities are selling the region's work-life balance, breathtaking views, and the warmth and hospitality of the people who call these communities home. Practicing or soon-to-be-qualified family physicians who are thinking of working in the area are invited to visit the two municipality websites and social media platforms to learn more. Thank you to Keith Dempsey from the Brockville Recorder and Times for that story. Up next is Simone Otley reading a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for the Morrisburg Leader, Philip Blanchet, about a crucial change made to the Cornwall, Stormont, Dundas, and Glengarry County ambulance service. Thank you to Philip Blanchet from the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move to a story from the local journalism initiative reporter for CJAI-FM, Amherst Island, Ted Evans, about the preparations being made in Loyalist Township in the run-up to the April 8th solar eclipse.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. The upcoming eclipse on April 8th is expected to bring an increase in visitor traffic to Lennox and Addington County. The county is set to fall within the path of totality, which will last approximately 3 minutes at around 3:22 p.m. Totality is when the moon fully covers the sun. The path of totality runs through parts of Mexico, the United States, and Canada. Loyalist Township and Greater Napanee are within the path, as well as much of Stone Mills Township. The eclipse is expected to begin at 2:09 p.m. and last until 4:33 p.m. Mike Adair, interim chief with Emergency Services, notes the importance of using safe eyewear.
The solar eclipse that is going to be occurring on April the 8th, and we're right in the middle of that. And it is an important thing that our population make sure that if you're looking at the eclipse, that you use that safe eyewear. And we have been planning for it. There's been a lot of work that's been going on in the background with the upper and the lower tiers in our neighboring communities to make sure that we are safe and can continue to operate during the eclipse.
Adair mentions the expected visitor traffic.
We do expect several individuals coming in to our area, and we are hearing even numbers like 500,000 into Kingston, so that certainly can have an impact on our operations. So we're prepared, we're ready, and make sure you use your safety eyewear.
The county will see such events as laser-guided stargazing tours at Lennox and Addington Dark Sky Viewing Area and a concert in Greater Napanee on the soccer field at the Strathcona Paper Center. For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans from CJAI-FM for that story. Next up, we have the CJPE Prince Edward County Local Journalism Initiative reporter Brenda Little with a story covering the proposed merger between three major health units in southeastern Ontario.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Prior to the pandemic, the Ontario Ministry of Health was expecting to reduce the 35 local health units down to 10. The mergers would be involuntary, and the initiative was to strengthen the public health sector. The unexpected surge in demand during the pandemic changed the face of public health, so merging was put on hold for the time being. In 2023, the merging idea was resurrected, and the announcement in August suggested that mergers would be voluntary, with the ministry establishing a three-year merger transition fund to support voluntary mergers, again reducing the local health units to 10 across the province. The health units are working with a very tight timeline. Business plans are to be submitted by April 2nd of this year, and assessments complete with mergers taking place by January 2025. There was a recent announcement to merge by Peterborough Public Health, Halliburton, Kawartha, and Pine Ridge health units, however. Others, such as Sudbury, Sault Ste. Marie, are declining to merge. Dr. Tumache outlined the work that has been done so far in Hastings, Prince Edward Public Health Unit.
So the desired outcomes is that to have a public health system where all local public health agencies have a critical mass and capacity needed to optimize performance and meet unexpected surges in demand. public health system where all agencies have the skilled personnel competencies to needed to fully deliver core public health services, and a cohesive public health system that better aligns with community and system partners to support progress in improving population health outcomes while reducing inequities. And for a greater context, when we look for public health units that are operating within Ontario, there's a wide variety on the sizes of units in terms of population served. And then, so going further into this provincial strategy, the goal is for public health units to be serving a minimum population base of over 500,000. Align partners with Kingston Frontenacs like Niagara Public Health, Leeds Grenville and Lanark Public Health. And so we've moved forward with a joint exploration of feasibility and have here our release that was going into December. So we're continuing that work. We've contracted with a consulting firm with extensive experience of local public health and also mergers within local public health in Ontario since new. So that work is still ongoing. We should be expecting completion of feasibility assessment anytime, and that's helpful because we're under very short timelines here. As part of that voluntary merger process, there's a deadline of April 2nd for business case submission. We have the template and we should be on track with meeting all of those, but this has been a very quick process. To recap, we had an announcement of this overall strategy in August, and we've gone from there to almost completion of the end of feasibility assessment, looking to submit the business case very shortly.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
And thank you to the team at CJPE County FM in Picton for that story. We now move to Jesse Bell with the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, April 4th, we saw snow throughout the day with a daytime high of 2 degrees. Moving overnight, it's going to drop down to 1 degree with a 60% chance of flurries. Friday, April 5th, 40% chance of precipitation. That is a mix of snow and rain, as it will be a daytime high of 5 degrees. Overnight, we have a 30% chance of precipitation with an overnight low of 1. Saturday, April 6th, we're back to that warmer weather, a daytime high of 9 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud. Looks like a beautiful early April Saturday. Overnight, dropping down to negative 1, however, going to be quite chilly. Sunday, April 7th, a beautiful double-digit day, 11 degrees and sunny, with an overnight low of 0. And then, of course, Monday, April 8th, the scheduled date of the North American solar eclipse. Here in the city of Kingston, we will be in the path of totality, and it looks like it's going to be a beautiful day, a high of 12 degrees, and it's sunny all day. If you are here in the city of Kingston, the eclipse is scheduled to occur between 3:22 p.m. and 3:25 p.m. Just as a reminder, please stay off the roads during the time of the eclipse, and if you're here in the city of Kingston, be prepared for increased traffic and increased pedestrian flow, as the city is looking at potentially as many as 500,000 daytime tourists. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Stay safe, enjoy that solar eclipse on Monday, April 8th, but do so with the proper protective eyewear. This is Jesse Bell signing off and throwing it over to CFRC's Danielle Draper for the community concert and events calendar.
Have an event you'd like covered on our website and news programming? Contact us via cfrc.ca today. On April 4th, head to Daft Brewing for a free stand-up comedy night from 7:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. Reserve your spot by direct messaging Daft Brewing Co. on Instagram. On April 4th and 6th, the Kingston Public Market will be held at Springer Market Square, featuring local vendors. The market will be open from 8:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. and will be open every Tuesday and Thursday until late fall. To view a full list of vendors, visit kingstonpublicmarket.ca. On April 5th, discover the ghosts of Queen's University on a haunted walking tour. There are eerie tales of student grave robbers, professors reaching out from the beyond, heists gone wrong, and streets shrouded in mystery. The tour costs $25.99 for adults and $19.99 for youth. Book your time slot at hauntedwalk.com/kingstontours. On April 6th, give improv improv comedy a try at the Isabel Bader Center from 12 to 2:30 p.m. For more information and pricing, contact info@improvkingston.com. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer space to swim and meet other students and wider trans community members? Head over to the Athletic and Recreation Center on April 7th at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.com. Moving into the concerts for the week, on April 4th, Blue Martini will be hosting a free open mic night from 8:30 p.m. to 12 a.m. Also on the 4th, Nyson will be performing for free at the Toucan from 9:30 to 1 a.m. On April 5th, Joe McLeod will be bringing his spring tour to the mansion with special guest Oak Ridge Avenue. Doors open at 8 p.m. Tickets start at $15 and can be purchased at sidedooraccess.com. Also on the 5th, Saul T. Dogs will be performing at the RCHA Club from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Cover is $5. There will also be free live music on the 5th. Christopher Jackson and friends will be performing both covers and originals at Blue Martini from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. This is an all-ages show and admission is free. On April 6th, Pacific Estate will be performing with support from Mobius Trip at the Mansion from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m. Cover is $10 and the event is 19+. And lastly, on the 7th, Doug Vanderhorden will be performing 60s to 90s hits and more at the Spearhead Brewery from 2 to 5 p.m. This is an all-ages show and admission is free. This has been Danielle with your weekly event and concerts calendar for April 1st to 7th. Wishing you all a great week.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and New Leaf Link. Don't forget to visit CFRC for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Have a wonderful day. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true friend loves you just as you are.